Finley back on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Of course, if you are unaware, we are your brand new home of the Chicago Bears, the Bears Radio Network, and it is a great opportunity for us, Brian, to bring in the longtime voice of the Bears, and it is great, great news that he will be on the call with his good buddy Tom Thayer right here on ESPN 1000 going forward. Jeff Joniak joins us here on ESPN 1000. And Jeff, just want to say officially on the air from Brian and me, welcome to the team. We're so excited to have you on the Bears Radio Network. I know you've already been on several shows, but I just want to say welcome to the team. Can't wait to hear you on the call for all of the Bears action here on ESPN 1000. And just want to say super excited to have you in.
I really appreciate that. It's been a warm welcome from everybody at ESPN 1000, a good Karma brand. So good to talk to you again, Brian. And yeah, let's have some fun. Let's score some touchdowns and win some games here in 2023 and beyond.
And look, this is such a big day for the Bears franchise come Thursday night. And everything's worked out well. God bless Lovey and the Texans. Make sure that they had the number one pick. And Ryan Poles made his decision. If you're sitting in that draft room, we just heard Tom Thayer advocating no offensive line for him. It's all about the defense. What's your take, Jeff?
Well, I've maintained, and I will continue to maintain right up until I'm forced to be on the clock to focus tunnel vision on the line of scrimmage. So I don't care if either side of the ball. I just hope three out of the first four picks are going to be guys on the line of scrimmage. So whatever you want to do, mix and match. You know, I brought this up many times, the left tackle position. While Braxton Jones had an incredible start to his career as a fifth-round pick and no idea this was going to happen, took every snap during the season. What you look at in Bears history of left tackles, you start in 1983 with Jimbo Covert, who had a Hall of Fame career, and then after that, it's free agency. It's guys that are undrafted trying to nail down that left tackle spot. You can go down the list from Troy Aziin to Andy Heck was an outstanding left tackle, still coaching the league. Blake Brockmeyer, just talked to him the other day, believe it or not. Mike Gandy, Kasim Mitchell, John Tate, a free agent. John St. Clair, the starting left tackle in 2008. Orlando Pace, Frank Omiel, Jermon Bushrod.
Omiel.
Charles Leno Jr. almost flamed out as a right tackle for the Bears. He did not have a good work ethic. They flipped him over as a last attempt to save his career at left tackle, and he was the most solid starter the Bears have had that they actually drafted, not intended to be a left tackle, since Jimbo Covert. So it's an exhaustive search. And so if you find a left tackle that you really believe in, and, you know, maybe it is going to be Peter Skoronski out of Northwestern, the local product, by every account, I know everybody's banging on his short arms, which will, if you want to clearly agitate my friend Tom Thayer, just talk about arm length any way, shape, or form. But, you know, you're talking about a guy that could be a key figure in the locker room from a leadership standpoint. He's got that in him in addition to being a very good football player. So who knows what they'll do? I like to leave it like Christmas morning, guys, and can't wait to see what happens when the presents are opened up.
All right, Jeff. So we'll leave the gifts wrapped then here for a moment. I'm curious, though. So with all the – what was your thought on how free agency played out? Because we saw some, at least on the first day, some rumors that the Bears were very interested in Mike McGlinchey, but he, of course, chose Denver. They made a lot of good moves. I like the signing of Nate Davis, but it does seem like tackle, whether it be right or left, depending on how you feel about Braxton Jones's long-term future. How did you feel about how Ryan Poles did in that first wave of free agency?
Loved it, and as we get to know each other, you'll know that I can't stand free agency. So I think, you know, you're overpaying for whatever, and you would have overpaid for Mike McGlinchey. Teams are going to do it. That's the way free agency is built. But I'd rather be a draft-driven team. So I felt, in my opinion, that Ryan Poles did exactly what he said he was going to do. He was not going to go crazy with the money. He was going to find value, and he was going to be really particular about what he wants, and that's a specific kind of Bear, a guy who fits whatever culture they've developed over there, and find pieces to the puzzle, and you get the big pieces in the draft, and that's why he wants so many draft picks. That's why he made that trade from number one. That's why he's trying to stockpile for the future, always looking ahead. Some of the best organizations are always looking a little bit down the road as well, and so this is how he dreamt it up. he was going to tear it down to the bare wire one way or another and build it back up and do it the right way.
Jeff Joniak joining us here on ESPN 1000. Jeff, you said something that really interests me because you said Ryan Poles did exactly the way he said he was going to do it. He has talked, and I'm just curious, have you been a little surprised by how transparent and open Ryan Poles has been publicly, not just internally, but like, you know, whether it be Peter King, you know, giving conversations with him or Albert Breer, he's been very open and everything he said seems to have come true.
Yeah, he is very transparent. He's always talking about it. He's not going to sit there. I mean, it is the lying season, so let's not kid ourselves. I mean, this is what happens, but he's not going to take you down paths that are ultimately going to wind somewhere else. I appreciate that. You know, and I think, and I've been asked this before if I'm shocked by it. I think we, as a community of Bears fans, and have gone through so many changes, the Bears were in the spotlight this offseason like no other. So they had the number one pick, the most cap space, and they were the attention grabber at the combine. They were getting all the national interviews. That has rarely happened in my time. So this has been a very different type of offseason. Even now, I went to the NFL owners meetings and seeing all the different people coming up to Ryan Poles and Kevin Warren, and from a national point of view, I said it. I keep saying this. I keep talking about poised to make some noise. The Bears are poised to make some noise, and whether that happens in a big 23 season, or it's going to take a couple years, I think the way he's approaching it and explaining to people what he wants to be is okay. I have no problem with it.
Jeff, I'm glad you made the point on the left tackle, and Braxton's a terrific story, and the guy works his ass off, and he certainly, you have a home for him here somewhere, but if you can't upgrade there, then you're not trying. And terrific story or not, I think you need more help on that side protecting your franchise quarterback. That said, if you're Ryan Poles right now and you trust your scouting staff, is it simply a decision of keeping number nine or moving down? Or, you know, even is there a scenario where they move up? What do you most likely, what do you do? Are you keeping the number nine and finding impact, or are you moving down and trying to get as many assets as possible?
I think anything is on the table. I don't see a move back into the top 10. I don't picture that, because that would be kind of counterintuitive based on the idea of gathering as many draft assets as possible. But hey, anything is possible. We've seen that happen many times. But, I think that it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility that they would move out of number nine if there's something tantalizing and they still have a pocket of guys, because that's how it is. You have four or five guys you know you can live with no matter where they fall. I'm sure everybody's got their heart set on somebody in that draft room and hope they get them. But you got to have a range of players that are graded fairly equally to feel comfortable about making any kind of move.
Jeff Joniak joining us here on ESPN 1000. So, Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong. You said as long as the Bears, three of their first four picks are on the line, you're happy, right?
That would be something. I started the offseason that way, Jeff. Mm-hmm. I got to continue that way.
No worries.
I don't want to sound wishy-washy, but I am.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that at least three of the first four, but at the same time, as I'm going through my draft prep for what is going to be a great weekend next weekend, I mean, the more you dig into guys and then you pop their highlights on and you see, and then you fall in love.
Yes.
I've fallen in love 55 million times already. And, Darnell Wright of Tennessee, falling in love with that guy right there. 6'5 and 3'8", 333. He's a bad man. He is physical. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be your left tackle. He would be more of a right tackle, in my opinion. But, you know, that guy. Who doesn't love Bijan Robinson?
That's where I was going, Jeff.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to ask you, because under that scenario, you could still have three of the first four picks be linemen, but that first one could theoretically be Bijan Robinson. So that's what I was going to ask you. Listen, we all know how the NFL has devalued the running back position, but I will also make the counterpoint that if you're drafting a running back who you think could be very special, you're not paying him big money with that first contract, so that's where the value comes in. So lay it out for us, Bijan Robinson.
Your quarterback.
What's that?
And you're helping your quarterback on top of it.
Oh, yeah, in a big way. I don't see how that player, barring injury, will be a failure. The pureness of his abilities, and as a receiver, just opening up your offense even more. I mean, I just listened to an interview with him that he did recently, and they said, hey, what was your favorite route? Well, I ran a 40-yard post pattern. Okay, I mean, great. I mean, he runs routes like McCaffrey and Kamara. He's a mismatch and an outstanding runner, but even a better dude. So, you know, again, that's – if you're truly heading the very best talent, regardless of position, that's what I believe in. I remember a long time ago when the Colts – kind of got ripped for drafting Dwight Freeney so high. Dwight Freeney became a Hall of Famer. He was a pass rusher in grade school, piling up sacks. He was the same in high school, did it in college, and did it in spades in the NFL. So a great player is a great player. No team can have enough great players. Now, they also need a cornerback. So that's another position that I would be open to, certainly, even high, even at the number 9 pick, believe it or not. That is a player that they need as well to help balance out that secondary.
I love that Bijan Robinson argument because, you know, some mock drafts have Philadelphia and saying, well, that's a luxury pick, and they have the luxury of doing it. But
yes, they do.
Jeff, you know, you said if everyone's devaluing the running back position, then zig when the other teams are zagging, and all you'd have to do is trust your scouting staff to know what they're looking at. And if he's in that pocket of players and he's there, maybe that's the guy.
Well, you know, the thing is about any position, again, if you're stocked at one position, who cares? I mean, honestly, who cares? Now, this is a team at 3-14, so I get the argument. But great players, if you foresee them as great players, they're multipliers. That term has become popular. They make everybody else better. I believe he helps both sides of the ball, for example. And granted, the value starts to diminish as soon as you drive that Cadillac off the showroom floor, in this case. And 5 years from now, you're going to have to pay him. But no one's going to want to pay him. You know, it's happening now around the league. Tony Pollard in Dallas getting rid of Zeke. You know, what's going to happen in Minnesota with Dalvin Cook? And they take on some wear and tear. So those arguments, I totally understand. But at the same time, I just want great players on my football team.
I'm with you completely there, Jeff. A lot of Bears fans, you know, and this is probably before the trade with the Panthers, and they actually added DJ Moore, but some Bears fans still would like to see them add Jaxon Smith-Njigba, if at all possible. What are your thoughts about the idea of the Bears adding a guy who Justin Fields actually knows fairly well?
Yeah, I get that connection. However, I don't see... I'm not enthralled with the top-end talent or of the wide receiver group this year. Nobody's like making me feel, God, I have to have that guy. He is going to be an outstanding receiver. There's no question about it. Coming off an injury, though, and I'm very hesitant. I know he's healthy now, but I'm always hesitant about taking on guys that had some sort of ailment. I guess I'm stung by the David Terrell when they knew they had a fracture in there, and if he was going to walk off a curb, he was going to be out. That happened, and he got hurt in a game, and that was the end of David Terrell, pretty much. There's many examples. Remember when the Lions drafted year after year first-round receivers that never worked out. I'm nervous about that. I'd rather find the best possible fit for the offense that I want to run at any round in this draft, because the receiver list is long. There are so many receivers of all shapes and sizes and speeds, so I would hold off on that. If that's my guess at number 9.
Jeff, we appreciate it. Obviously, as you heard, he's a walking Bears encyclopedia, as we heard all those classic names, this walk down Bears memory lane. It was a great hit, Jeff. We appreciate it. We'll be hearing from you lots this week. I know you'll be joining Waddle and Sylvie as well on draft night, so we'll be listening for you here on ESPN 1000.
Yes, it'll be fun, and draft day, I know Bears fans and all NFL fans love it. It's an entire season into itself, and we're getting knee-deep in it, so having fun.
Great.
Thanks,
stuff.
Guys. Have
great
a great
catching
Sunday.
Up. Thanks,
Thank
Jeff.
You. Jeff Joniak there on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline. Again, you'll be hearing lots of him. He is the voice of the Bears here on the Bears Radio Network, ESPN 1000. All right, we've got some, I guess, some movement regarding the potential trade between the Packers and Jets, or at least a potential soft, quote, deadline. We'll tell you about it next here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
Mellor and Hanley here on ESPN 1000 here till 11 o'clock. Just had a nice conversation with Jeff Joniak. He joined us on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline. breaking down what he would like to see from the Bears on draft night. We're talking with you, 312-332-3776. If you'd like to tell us what you're hoping the Bears do, or maybe what you're hoping they don't do, we're interested in both those conversations with you on ESPN 1000.
Jeff's got me falling in love with Robinson, and maybe you're already there. I mean, I kind of dismissed that idea, but you can make that argument. I'm willing to listen now.
The one thing Jeff said is, like, you know, ultimately it's about accumulating good players on the roster. And when I look at where the Bears are at, there's such a need for just a blue chip caliber player, right? And I think when you look at the players in this draft, you feel pretty comfortable saying that Bijan Robinson, he's a guy who, if he can avoid injury, you know, he's going to be a really good player in the NFL. But what I just said, of course, the running back position is so susceptible to injury because they're taking on more hits than any player on the field. And they're taking them on usually at an angle where it's violent, right? You've got those,
sure,
you know, guys rushing from all angles and getting hit in the knee. And so that's the concern. That's why I think that more than anything else, that's why you don't necessarily want to invest in that.
Is he really running 40-yard pass patterns? I mean, if that's a thing.
Well, he lined up in the slot his freshman year at Texas quite a bit. So because, you know, they were looking for ways to get him on the field. So everyone said Saquon Barkley. I've seen people, though, if you want to go back, like Marshall Faulk, he's got the ability as a receiver out of the backfield to be, as Jeff talked about, just a playmaker. So
that works for me.
So, yeah. So, like, I see the argument
against it. That's not the safe pick, obviously. I mean, it's a safe pick because he's a stud talent.
Yeah.
But most people don't have the Bears going running back. So if Ryan Poles, I mean, he doesn't seem to lack for confidence. So if that's who he and his staff believe is the best guy at number nine, you know, then good luck.
And, the one thing, too, is that when you're drafting a running back, now you're getting, you know, especially if you take him in the first round, you've got him for the 4 years and then the fifth-year option. So that's an affordable price to have that running back as well. So I get it. You can find running backs later in the draft. You can oftentimes plug guys in. But if you have a guy who's a true game changer as well, and again, we've talked about the Bears just need some weapons for Justin Fields. So I wouldn't be disappointed if they took him. It wouldn't be my selection necessarily, but I could talk myself into being excited about the possibility.
Yeah, I'm still on the Paris Johnson bandwagon, but I'm open to suggestions at this point. And you know, yesterday I was having a couple beers with a couple former producers, Dennis Gambino and Adam Harris, up around Wrigleyville. Where are you going to be on draft night?
I will be. I will be. I'll tell you about that in a moment. Go ahead, though. Share us.
And we were solving all the sports world's problems, and Aaron Rodgers' name came up. And it's like, hey, what's going on with that? Because as he told Pat McAfee, his intention was to play for the Jets, but that's more than a month ago. It's been a while. We've been on hold here. And I guess the only thing we can agree upon is he will not be QB1 Hall of Fame quarterback for the Packers anymore, but this Jets thing doesn't seem like it's slam dunk, whether his intention is to play for the Jets or not. And, you know, the owner came out and told them all the nice things they want to hear. But the fact of the matter is the Packers seemingly are still holding fast to wanting a first round draft pick from the Jets. And the Jets are holding fast to the idea, no, try again. We'll give you a second round pick. So Adam Schefter reported on Thursday that his information is that this upcoming Friday, the second day of the draft, is the quote unquote soft deadline for this deal to be consummated. Because likely the Packers would want 2023 draft capital, and if they finally came off their asking price and agreed to the Jets' second-round pick, well, you have to get that deal done before the Jets utilize one or both. They have picks 42 and 43 overall in the second round. So you assume that that's the centerpiece of the deal, or part of the deal anyway, that they would have to get that done. Adam Schefter is suggesting that's, in fact, the case. And, okay, who's blinking here? And you know, there's talk out there that, well, the Packers could start making the phone calls that Drew Rosenhaus isn't making. They could call the 49ers or Tampa, or I can't imagine that Aaron Rodgers would want to go to Tennessee. And the argument that, well, he has to go wherever because he's being traded, well, that's not so. He can just say, I'm not going anywhere. I'm done.
I'm hanging him up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or guess what? I'm sticking around Green Bay and you're paying me the $50 million you owe me. Whatever.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah,
if you really want to make it messy.
This is a staring contest.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think the Packers have to blink. Because I don't think they can break. They're in a scenario where they need to see what Jordan Love is.
Yeah.
They've gone down this path now. They've kind of done everything they can to push Aaron Rodgers, you know, aside. And so, like you said, with the contract he has, I don't think it's feasible for the Packers to realistically bring him back. So I mean,
the suggestion always been, well, he wants to go back out west to California where he played college ball. Mm-hmm. So San Francisco could make some sense. Tampa, I don't know what his inclination is to go down there and follow Tom Brady's footsteps.
Yeah.
Tennessee, I would just say he's probably got no interest in that, even though he played in a smaller market, but certainly not a market with the history that Green Bay had. But I mean, this deal we were just talking is like, when is this deal going to get done? And what does the North look like for the Bears, Lions, and Vikings? You have to still operate on the assumption that Jordan Love is now the man in Green Bay. And unless he's everything the Packers hope him to be, this division's open for the next couple, two, three years, right?
And it was, you know, Bear fan Bob, who our caller earlier in the 9 o'clock hour mentioned, you know, everybody's sweetheart team, the Lions, had a little bit of a gambling fiasco.
And we don't have the details on that exactly, but two guys are out for at least a year. It's suspended indefinitely.
Yeah, because they were, and they were released. Quintez Cephas and Moore, the safety, they were both...
Cut Friday.
Released, yeah. They were released by the Lions because they were gambling on NFL games.
Right.
Jameson Williams and Barry Hill, who was, like, I believe, a practice squad player for the Lions. Two wide receivers. Most people know Jameson Williams. He was the, you know, top 10 pick by the Lions last year, who was coming back from an ACL injury. So he didn't play much last year, but a lot of people thought he could be a real game breaker for him this year. He's going to miss the first six games because he was gambling in the team facility. This is the thing, obviously, on a different sport. The thing that I brought up with Waddle and Sylvie on Friday, Bri. It is asinine to me that the NFL has these rules in place where players are allowed to gamble on other sports, but just not in the team facility.
Right.
Because the truth is that it could be something as subtle as Jameson Williams could have pulled up in his car, parked in the parking lot, and I'm not saying this did happen, but it's possible he could on his phone, using an app, whatever gambling app he likes to use to gamble on NBA or MLB or NHL or whatever he's gambling on, not NFL. It's possible he could have pulled into the parking lot. His phone, if he was close enough, could have joined the team Wi-Fi.
Yep.
And he could have made a wager on a basketball game, theoretically, and then he's in the team facility. However, he also could have been in the parking lot, but on his phone, on his network, and made the same wager, and it technically would have not been in the team facility because it would have been on his phone, but
in his car.
So, like I'm saying, if it's that subtle of a difference, and I'm not saying that's what happened, but it's possible. I think the idea that you can't gamble on other sports in the team, like, again, I get it, but I think it's kind of weird to have that distinction.
But and the other part of this, Jeff, is they didn't say, okay, they're betting on NFL games. They didn't say they're betting on the Lions. They didn't say who they were betting on. And this goes from all the way back to Pete Rose. So, you know, was he betting on or against the Reds while he was the manager? Because
he only bet on them to win, Brian.
Right, of course he did. But
except the games he didn't bet on them at all.
This, 2011, 2012, 2013, Roger Goodell was testifying, you know, that this was going to be Armageddon, the day that ever legalized gambling to the point. The NFL, I mean, talk about keeping gambling at arm's length to the point now where you have sports books inside stadiums and arenas. And yet you still have these rules, quote unquote, that, you know, players either know or don't know, should know, I suppose, because it's their livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you talk about a gray area. You've now, because the money has told you how much the NFL owners are making hundreds of millions of dollars with these officially licensed partners.
Of
course. You know, we couldn't have anything to do with that. We don't want anything, you know, gambling. We don't want to influence the outcome. And that all sounded well and good until someone showed you, well, one, it's legal, and here's how much money every team can make off of this every season.
Before we get there, Bri, before I dive into that, let me give you the odds brought to you by Caesars on who will be the first overall pick in this year's draft. No, it's incestuous, and it has been brought into every aspect. And you're right. It's too much money for the NFL to turn away. And that's fine. Again, I think, though.
I mean, is it? They make billions of dollars, billions and billions
it's all
of
about
dollars.
Growth,
and so
you can never stop growing, Brad.
Well, apparently there's never enough money because the hundreds of millions are dividing up among all the teams. It's just enough to get the owner's interest, even though you supposedly your product was sacrosanct less than a decade ago or a decade ago. And by the way, your first overall pick odds, I heard on the ESPN national show this morning, a woman, a betting expert, touting C.J. Stroud at 8-1. Because your guy, Bryce Young, is now supposedly...
Yeah, a lock. Like, he's a heavy favorite.
And she said a scout told her that Bryce Young is Doug Flutie without the flair. Now, okay, put that in your... You know, stand up on your draft table and advocate for that. Doug Flutie without the flair.
Oof.
And Carolina's sitting there...
He's Flutie without the flakes.
She said, run to the window and get the 8-1 on C.J. Stroud right now and book it because that guy looks the part, even though he's a quarterback from Ohio State. We still know there's Bear fans who question whether that was the right move to make, but Justin Fields
run
is here.
Run to the window, make that wager. The odds are too good to pass up unless you play in the NFL. Then don't do
don't
it at
Don't do
all.
It, and, not in the facility anyway.
Certainly don't
Maybe
do it in the facility.
Was any of them betting on the length of the national anthem at the Super Bowl, and they just happened to be at the facility that day, over minute 55?
The unanswerable questions. That's a great question, Brian. I don't know. 312-332-3776. We're getting set for the draft. We're talking about it with you here on ESPN 1000. Chase, Craig, everybody else, hang with us. We'll get to you, I promise. I did want to mention, though, you brought it up. Thank you for the little plug here. I will be live at Yaxi's in Wrigleyville.
Ooh,
3710 North Clark. 3710 North Clark in Wrigleyville. Yaxi's. I will be there with Peggy Kaczynski on Thursday night, draft night. We'll be there for a watch party. Me and Peggy there from 7 to 9 o'clock. So come on out and join us. If you are looking for a spot somewhere in the city on the near north side, join us in Wrigleyville. We'll be there.
The wings are great. The conversation is going to be wonderful. And the pizza, underrated.
Dude, we're going to have a blast, and I have to say, for me, draft night, it's one of my, you know, I'm just an NFL junkie. Anybody who listens to the station knows that, especially when, you know, I have fantasy football. I'm in on every team.
Yep.
So, of course, I'm going to be jacked to see what the Bears do. It is one of the most exciting drafts for the Bears in a long, long time. But I also love to see what other NFL teams are doing and how they're putting together their blueprints for what they hope to be a Super Bowl contender down the road. So I'm going to be there with Peggy Kaczynski. We'll be talking Bears. We'll be talking NFL at Yaxi's Thursday night from 7 to 9. So come on out and join us again, 3710 North Clark, if you're in the area, all presented by Tullamore Dew, the fine Irish whiskey. So we'll be there drinking some Tullamore Dew with you, hopefully, on Thursday night. 312-332-3776. Talking draft with you here on ESPN.
Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Miller and Hanley with you till 11 o'clock here on ESPN 1000. White Sox coverage starts at 12 today with your pregame as the White Sox try and snap the Tampa Bay Rays' home winning streak. They've won. They're 12-0 at home in this 2023 season. Lucas Giolito will be on the mound up against the highest paid player for the Rays, as Brian noted earlier, Zach Eflin, as he returns from the injured list.
$11 million breaking the bank in Tampa because Tampa has a $74 million payroll, about $85 million less than the median team payroll in the league, let alone the $300-plus million the Mets have spent. And I mean,
all they are is the best team in baseball.
Best team, and they've hit a home run in every single game. They've got a couple walk-offs against our beloved White Sox. And they had 22,000 strong showing up for this historic start to the season because Tampa is never going to be a baseball market, apparently.
Hey, man, when they crack 15,000,
wake me up, then I'll go.
This is
just smoke and mirrors. I don't know. I'm not believing. I'm not buying.
Boy, it's it would be really good for the White Sox to get a win today because they sorely, sorely need one. And it doesn't get any easier this week. They've got Toronto coming up after the Rays, and then, of course, the Rays come back to town. So it is not going to be an easy schedule for the White Sox anytime soon. But we're talking NFL draft and, more importantly, what the Bears should do. this Thursday night because we're pretty pumped. We've been talking about it for a long time. Basically, since the season ended, we've been talking about the Bears' possibilities, and it is less than a week away. Thursday night, the NFL draft coming your way. Let's try Chase on the south side. He's on with Meller and Hanley. What's up, Chase?
What's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
You tell us, bud. What's going on, Chase? Happy Sunday.
Nothing. Happy Sunday, you guys, too. So, listen, I'm more a component of they have to address that D-line, though, because if they don't address this defensive line, whether it's through this draft or maybe the back end of free agency, I don't see this team really winning no more than, say, maybe four or five games. I'm sorry. They cannot go into the season with this D-line. I mean, I'm more worried that if you don't – because what hinders Justin's development, people aren't talking about it, is if the D-line isn't getting better, that's gonna make him feel like he has to play hero ball. And we can't have that. Like, we can't have another season where our defensive line is not getting pressure on the quarterback, they're not getting any sacks, they're not stopping the run. I mean, if you can't stop the run and you can't get pressure on the quarterback – there's no way in the world you can win. That's why I believe they have to address the D-line this draft. They have to. We cannot go into this draft after this draft and they haven't addressed that. There's no way. I mean, you cannot. You just have to address that position.
Okay, but that said, Chase, you know, and Jeff Joniak said he's with you. Offense, defense, in the trenches, three of the first four have to be linemen. Okay, however you parse it out. And you brought up Nolan Smith, Jeff. But my question was, if Jalen Carter is gone and Tyree Wilson's gone, 5-6, no matter which way they go, and if that scenario plays out.
And Will Anderson will be off the board.
Yeah, so well off the board. Now are you overdrafting for need at number 9? Or do you move down feeling good that Nolan's sitting there 18, 17, wherever you feel you have to be securely positioned to get him? Because in most mock drafts, and mock drafts are like, you know what, rear ends, everyone's got one, cleaned up a little bit there. You have to move down, I think. You don't reach at number 9. Now, you cannot reach for a player at number 9. You have to have impact immediately. If you like the ceiling of a guy that you think is going to be a hell of a player, that's great. And maybe your conviction is, well, we believe in him, and we graded him out to be an 8 or 9, even though most people have 18, you better be right. You better be right, because you're not sitting here in the most important draft night for the Bears in forever. And in my world, reaching. How many times we've seen GMs reach their first draft in the first in 7, 8, 9?
Brian, we lived it with Ryan Pace
Phil Emery.
Certainly. No, you're certainly right about that. And the one thing that drives me crazy, though, is and I think Ryan Pace, because he's recent, too, it's easy for Bears fans to remember. And if you look at what he did, he fell in love with a player.
Yep.
And he was convinced himself time and time again that he couldn't let them pass him by because he was, you know, whatever he saw on the tape, he was so sure that he was going to be letting a generational Hall of Fame player go by if he didn't make the move. And it's great to applaud a guy and say, have conviction in your beliefs. I love that. But the reality of the NFL and drafting is it's much better to understand that you don't know what you don't know, right? And so a lot of this, too, there's not enough emphasis put on how much development goes into a player, right? And that's where organizations are responsible for a lot as well. Sometimes you just don't have the infrastructure to get the best out of a player. And the guy you're drafting, he may not live up to the hype that you believe he is because you haven't put him in a position to succeed. We saw it with Trubisky. We saw it with Leonard Floyd.
Floyd for sure. I mean, that was a reach. West Virginia, the kid was, he could never keep weight on. I was down in Bourbonnais, and we were talking to Leonard Floyd as he was going to the to lunch in the facility, and his phone went off. The alarm went off on the phone. And like, what's that? And he's like, oh, I have it set like every half hour I have to eat something. Because they told him, he never was able to. I mean, that was a reach. You go back to Curtis Enos, that was a reach. And they say, well, Penn State never told us honestly what they thought about the kid. They said it was the greatest thing, and the character issues came. They've reached, you can go back forever. When was the last time they got a legitimate top 10 pick who actually played out that at that point?
I mean, are we going back to, I mean, I know if he's not a top ten, or, you know, Urlacher. I'm trying to think of, like, the last real, like, home run that the Bears hit. You know
top,
what I mean?
Top ten now. I mean,
yeah,
like,
well, if you're going to top ten, boy.
I mean, Tommy Harris was 14. And just Cedric Benson, I don't think that was the guy at number four.
I mean, I guess we're going to have to cross our fingers and hope it's Justin
Leonard
Fields.
Floyd at nine. Mitchell Trubisky, they gave away the farm. And again, Ryan Pace thought he was the smartest guy in the room. And yes, maybe there are four or five GMs that, but for the grace of God, there go I.
Yes, yes, yes.
But he was the one who made the move.
That's the point, though, that ultimately, you know, to underline it again, is that you're not going to, in all likelihood, end up regretting much if you trade back and add some extra assets. And then you trust your ability as a scout, and hopefully you can find the best guy on the board when your pick is up. And if you add some assets down the road, you know what? That gives you another shot, another dart throw to hit that bullseye. And you don't always know when you're, like, as a GM, like, you don't know when you're going to be right.
Yeah.
You're throughout the seven rounds, you may be right half the time. Sometimes that right might happen in the fifth and sixth rounds, and you may be very happy with the players you pick, but it's the guys who are overconfident that they know the guy in the first round needs to be the guy. Those are the guys who end up getting themselves in trouble because they trade away valuable assets.
And Jerry Angelo used to always look for trade down and get out of the top 10 because he always thought safety in numbers. And by the way, I misspoke because Kevin White was, you know, the West Virginia.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out too well.
But Leonard Floyd had the same thing. They wanted him to add weight, you know, coming from Georgia.
But, I mean, Roquan Smith wasn't Ryan Pohl's guy, but he was selected 8 overall, and he didn't want to pay him. Okay, so he basically he's telling me that he wouldn't have drafted him 8 overall if you're not paying him in his prime.
Well, do you remember, I don't remember, earlier this year, Matt Eberflus was asked, it was in training camp. He was asked about drafting Roquan Smith. And I think the question was something along the lines of, you know, did you guys consider taking Roquan Smith in Indianapolis when you guys selected Quentin Nelson instead? And Eberflus was like almost stunned. Like, I'm not sure he knew exactly where Roquan Smith was taken in that draft, because probably after the Colts took Nelson, he was like, they were on to the next group of players. And he was like, no, he's like off-ball linebacker. No, Ballard wouldn't let that happen.
No.
In the top 10. So he like, and he was almost surprised that
someone
took Roquan Smith that high.
Yeah. Help.
So I think if Ryan Poles ends up trading down, if he can find a willing partner, I think that will be ultimately a good move for the Bears, because whoever you're, again, it depends on who's on the board and are they willing to make the Jalen Carter risk. I don't know.
If he's not there, I'm all for moving down and getting someone like you mentioned, Nolan, or because I think if you're taking one of those guys at nine, whatever your conviction is, God bless you. I think you're overdrafting, and I've seen too much overdrafting in the top 10 for the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, if one of those edge, you know, if Wilson is off the board, if Carter's off the board, at that point, I really do think you start to turn your attention to the tackle spots, you know, the offensive tackle as well. Again, I'm with Tom Thayer. I understand you need some talent on the defensive line, but that goes to your point. Don't overdraft a guy. Don't force Lucas Van Ness into that ninth spot because you're desperate for a lineman. Just take the best talent available. I think there's a lot of good, you know, tackles. Darnell Wright, somebody who all of a sudden sounds like he could be the first tackle taken. A lot of people love the tape they've seen from him. So there's a lot of possibility for the Bears, and because they've got some holes on both the offensive and defensive line, this is where you say, if we can add more draft assets, let's go ahead and do that and then end up taking the best player available.
And trust your coaching staff to develop the said player.
Let's try Craig, who's in Lansing, Michigan. Craig, you got a destination for Aaron Rodgers, possibly?
I do. And, you know, I like the Bears talk, too. And I'll just say that I said the other day, I think they should go offense because you have a I'll get to Rodgers in just a second. I think you should go offense even if it's a boring left tackle. Just get your guy. Get somebody on offense, because you just saw, you know, a great defense give up 38 points in the Super Bowl. You got a playmaker like Justin Fields. Now get him a little bit more. And they could, you know, I agree. I think I heard one of you guys say that division isn't that, you know, it's up for grabs the next few years. I believe that is true. Now, Rodgers, what if he ended up in Atlanta? I mean, Tampa can't afford anybody. And to me, as attractive as Godwin and Mike Evans are, I'm just as attracted, if I'm Rodgers, to Kyle Pitts and Drake London. I mean, and if you look at that team versus, say, the Jets, they were both 7-10 last year. And so well, maybe the Jets were 8-9. I can't remember. They were very close, but I know Atlanta was 7-10, a pretty good team. They went out and signed some guys on defense. You're looking at two guys on the line that have been to a Pro Bowl before. Chris Winstrom went last year, and forget the other guy's name, but they got a couple young guys on the line. They've got everything that he would want, and I believe he has a much better chance winning the division against Tampa, Carolina, in New Orleans than he would ever have against the Dolphins and the Bills. And that's completely discounting, as everybody's doing, Bill Belichick's ability to put a good football team on the field this year. So I never did like his Jets destination, and I never did think he was going to be the savior they think he's going to be, but in Atlanta, he could win that division.
So that's a little bit of I think it's a different conversation there, Craig, and be careful. Make sure you don't gamble in team facilities. I know you clearly work for the Atlanta Falcons the way he's promoting.
Say hello to Ryan Pace for us.
The Falcons as a destination, that seems like that's just way out of left field, just because it's a winnable division. I think when you're a professional athlete, Bri, you're not always ultimately concerned about division.
You're in your final act as Aaron Rodgers, going to the Hall of Fame. The one thing you have are not enough Super Bowl appearances, let alone wins, right?
Mm-hmm.
I hear if you can make it in New York, if you make it there, you can make it anywhere. I think the allure is doing it on the big stage and under the bright lights of New York and being the guy that puts a team on his back in his final chapter as an NFL Hall of Fame quarterback and saying, watch me, I'm dragging you to not only the playoffs, we're going to be in the conversation in the next couple of years to win a Super Bowl and I'll be out and then I can take my bow.
And not necessarily that this is the primary motivation, but what better feather in his cap than to say, you know what? You know that Brett Favre playbook he ran? Well, I did it, and then I actually took the Jets even farther than he did.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, he's, because no matter what he wants, he's always going to be, you know, talked about with Brett Favre.
Yep.
That's the reality of his situation, whether he likes it or not. So, you know, why not lean into it and actually, you know, take the Jets deeper?
Don't be taking pictures with your cell phone
when you're
in New York with like Brett Favre.
Yes.
Don't be doing that.
And don't steal money from your hometown state.
Well, there's that. Yeah, we need a volleyball facility. I'll help.
312-332-3776. He's Hanley. I'm Meller. Back to wrap things up on ESPN 1000.
Live on the ESPN Chicago app. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Up here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. All right, so Bears fans, what about possibly trading down? Is that even feasible? Todd McShay talked about the rumors about the Bears maybe trading down with the Houston Texans.
It wouldn't shock me, too. I know they've already made the one move to 9, but you've got Houston sitting there at 12 and a lot of rumors that they're not going to take a quarterback at that number 2 spot. They pick again at 12. Tennessee's at 11. If Houston doesn't take a quarterback and one of the quarterbacks is still on the board at, you know, when they get to 9, 10, that range, they could be a team that tries to get up ahead of Tennessee to go get that quarterback. So moving down a couple more spots and getting, you know, maybe Skoronski at that 12 spot or one of the three other tackles that we've talked about, Broderick Jones from Georgia, Paris Johnson from Ohio State, or Darnell Wright in Tennessee, that all are going to go in that range of, like I said, 10 to 17. Might be a good solution as well.
That's Todd McShay with Waddle and Sylvie earlier this week talking about a trade down.
Yeah, it makes sense. Skoronski probably still be there. I'd move even further down if I'm looking for one of those defensive tackles if Carter and Tyree are off the board. But that's just me. But it makes sense if you're Houston to position yourself to get a quarterback, right, and not be in the top 6-7 in order to do so.
And at least the majority of Bears fans, based on our web poll, would be more than happy to see that. 55% would like the Bears to trade down if possible. That is more than, of course, the 42% that would like to see them keep the number 9 selection. And 3%, only 3% would like to see the Bears trade up.
Yeah, that would be the shocker, but it's certainly an option. And you know, we've seen shock on draft days before.
Not surprising to me, only surprising in terms of the actual percentage the White Sox are receiving. Brian asked, which team will have the better record at the end of the season? 89% say the Cubs will. 11% say the Sox will. Right now, it feels
and if
like
you asked that question a month
task.
Ago on the eve of the Ooh. Season, mm. it would have been the other way around. I mean, those yeah. percentages, you might not, 11% of Cub fans wouldn't have thought they were going to have a better record. Again, it's early,
yep.
but it's not that early.
The White Sox take their 7-14 record up against Tampa Bay. They try and end the Tampa Bay Rays' undefeated streak at home right now. They are 12-0 on the season, a league best 18-3. It'll be Lucas Giolito up against Zach Eflin. The pregame coverage will come your way at noon today. First pitch at 12:40. And the Cubs will try and get a split against the Dodgers at Wrigley Field today. Clayton Kershaw up against Marcus Stroman. Good pitching match there, Bri.
Yeah, not only that, Cub fans, Sox fans, usually if you're friends, you make that bet every year, which team's going to have the better record, and mm-hmm. you bet lunch, dinner, case of beer, whatever.
Yep.
$50. Would you make that bet today if you're a Sox fan? do you have enough faith?
I need some real odds,
yeah,
Bri.
Yeah, but you said it. What was that to be 85 wins? They have to go 15 over 500 from here on out?
Yep, the rest of the way.
That is a tall order.
That is not good if you're a White Sox fan. He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next Sunday to recap the draft, no doubt about it. Draft on Thursday. Don't forget, I'll be at Yahtzee's in Wrigleyville from 7 to 9 with Peggy Kaczynski. So come out and say hello. Thanks to Jeff Joniak and Kendra Smith. Thanks to you, Bri. I'll talk to you next Sunday.
We'll see you.